Benjamin Franklin once said, "There's a difference between imitating a good man and counterfeiting him." Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Christian Questions, Talk Radio with a Purpose with Jonathan and Rick. The objective of our program is to discuss with you, our listeners, thought-provoking, meaningful topics based on the Bible. It's a call-in format. We're caller-friendly, and we certainly look forward to hearing your point of view. And for those of you who may be listening for the first time, our perspective is this. We believe there is one God, and through Him, there's one truth which is found in the Bible. Our purpose is to stir your thinking up along with ours as we continually search for clarity in understanding this one truth.
While we are not here to teach, we are here to seriously provoke your thinking, according to Hebrews 10:24, which is the theme for our program. And let us consider one another to provoke unto love and good works. This provoking is encouraged by Isaiah 1:18. Come now, and let us reason together. And we look to frame our comments in the context of 1 Thessalonians 5, verses 19 and 21. Quench not the Spirit, prove all things, hold fast that which is good. And the only end result we seek to accomplish is to bring praise, honor, and glory to God our Father and Jesus our Lord.
And if you'd like to contact us or suggest a topic for a future program and receive a Christian Questions travel mug, here's what you do.
You write us at Christian Questions, P.O. Box 1837, New London, Connecticut, 06320, or check us out on the web at www.christianquestions.net. Today is November 16th, 2008. All audio and printed material are copyrighted and are the property of Christian Questions.
And if you do have a Christian question, please be sure to let us know. We'd love to hear from you on that. So on behalf of Jonathan, my co-host.
Good morning, Rick.
Looking dapper this morning. And Fred, the man behind the board.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hello, Fred. We want to welcome you to this hour of the program. What does dapper mean anyway?
That's a good question. I think a dapper Dan.
Dapper Jonathan. Anyway, Jonathan, last week, where were we?
Well, our subject was a difficult one. It was, so what about abortion?
That was a an important discussion, one that is not filled with a lot of joy, I guess, is the way to put it. But one of those discussions that needs to be had, that needs to be, you need to be frank about it and put it out there on the table and really examine it and not be afraid of what you're going to find. And because it comes down to a life and death situation, and it's a sad state of affairs that we are faced with on a daily basis here, with that being such a part of our world. It's very, very unfortunate. But a very good discussion. We want to thank everybody who called in and contributed to that program. What's on tap for this morning? We're going to do something a lot nicer, I think.
Yes. Our question this morning, Rick, is, what does it mean to turn the other cheek? And our theme text is found in Matthew chapter 5, verse 39. But I say unto you, that ye resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite thee on thy right cheek, turn to him the other also.
And Jonathan, we are all sensitive about our rights. When someone does us wrong, we want to at least even the score, if you know what I mean, or give back maybe even a little bit extra just as a reminder that you shouldn't be messing with me. Well, the funny thing about that attitude of retaliation, it's not just a modern-day attitude. It's an attitude that has prevailed throughout the centuries. Jesus saw that attitude in his day and taught lessons on how to overcome it in ourselves as we deal with the world around us. So, folks, stay with us this morning as we look into Jesus' teachings about turning the other cheek and what it means in a very practical sense for us today. What are the questions?
We have two for the consideration this morning. The first, was Jesus' instruction to turn the other cheek literal?
Oh, okay. And that's an important question that we are going to spend quite a bit of time on. And then secondly, how do we do it? How do we turn the other cheek today? So let's, folks, if you can, give us this first segment to lay some groundwork here before we start taking calls. Jonathan, let's, the admonition, as you read, is from Matthew 5:39.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In order to really understand that, I think it's important to go back to the beginning of the fifth chapter of Matthew and sort of sum up some of the things that happened first. So if you go back to the very beginning of Matthew chapter 5, what is happening there? Everybody knows what it's called.
The Sermon on the Mount.
Right, the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus is addressing his followers. Now, he's talking to his followers directly. Now, there's masses of people there, but it says he spoke to his disciples. And much of that lesson is one of attitude. that should provoke our actions. And remember, it's always blessed is he that, or blessed is the pure in heart. Now I'm drawing a blank. I should know these. The contrite in spirit. Blessed are you if you're persecuted for righteousness' sake, on and on and on. All of these things. Blessed are you. And then it goes into the lessons of you are the salt of the earth.
And the light of the world.
Right. And let your light shine. Mm-hmm. So that's verses 1 through 16. So we've covered 16 verses in 30 seconds. We've never done that in our lives. The next section is a critical transition. I'm going to slow way down here. See, because up to this point, Jesus has been building his followers' understanding of Christianity based upon the principles of righteousness and love. He's not yet referred to his followers' base of spiritual understanding. Now, see, their base of spiritual understanding would have been what?
The law.
Right, because they were Jews, and they were under the law. So he has not yet really referred to the law per se. So in the next section of Matthew 5, he's addressing their spirituality, and he's carefully building his reasoning upon the base of the law, because this is something they could identify with. Now, in this reasoning, Jesus does two things. First, he clarifies the value of the law. All right, and I think that's an important point to make. And secondly, he builds on the base of the law to bring out deeper meaning, the deeper meaning of what we would call the spirit of the law. And we're going to be talking about that contrast throughout the program, the letter of the law versus the spirit of the law. So let's start some reading, Jonathan, with Matthew 5, 17 through 20, as Jesus is now introducing the law and where it fits into his teaching of his disciples.
Think not that I came to destroy the law or the prophets. I came not to destroy, but to fulfill. For verily I say unto you, till heaven and earth pass away, one jot or one tittle shall in no wise pass away from the law, till all things be accomplished. Whosoever therefore shall break one of these least commandments, and shall teach men so, shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whosoever shall do and teach them, he shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I say unto you, that except your righteousness shall exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, ye shall in no wise enter into the kingdom of heaven.
All right, now there's a lot there. We're not going to spend a lot of time talking about it. But first he introduces this whole idea in Matthew 5, 17 through 20. He says, I didn't come to destroy the law and the prophets. He said, I came instead to fulfill them. Now, it's interesting when you fulfill something, you've completed the responsibilities towards it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But he's still saying, look, I didn't come to destroy it even though I've come to fulfill it. All right? And so he's talking about that the principles of the law are sound and solid and should be recognized as such. Now, in Luke 16, 14 through 17, he's different context, but Jesus is essentially saying the same thing. It's just he says it a little bit more clearly, I think, on one point.
And the Pharisees also, who were covetous, heard all these things, and they deride him. And he said unto them, ye are they which justify yourselves before men, but God knoweth your hearts. For that which is highly esteemed among men is abomination in the sight of God. The law and the prophets were until John. Since that time the kingdom of God is preached, and every man presseth into it. And it is easier for heaven and earth to pass than one tittle of the law to fail.
So again, he talks about the law and the prophets, and he specifies the law and the prophets were until when?
Till John the Baptist.
Till John the Baptist. Now, John the Baptist was the introducer of Jesus.
Right.
So he's saying that you had the law and the prophets in place, and he's very specific. Until John, he says, and now the kingdom of heaven is at hand. So it's saying those things brought you to this moment, and there's a transition. But again, he's not throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Mm-hmm.
He's not saying, well, you know, the law is completely useless now, let's throw it away. He's saying that this was there for a very specific reason to get you to where you need to be. Understanding good and evil is really what it boiled down to. And he says, now I am going to take you levels higher than that. So I think that's the important introduction here that he deals with. And in verse, just a real quick point, Matthew 5, in verse 20, he says, for I say unto you.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's pay attention to that phrase, because that phrase, for I say to you, or but I say unto you, is going to be coming up again and again and again, and it's a comparative phrase. He's going back to something they knew and then showing them something bigger, stronger, better, faster, higher, and more difficult. Okay? Now, let's, again, just in dealing with the relationship between Christianity and the law, because we have talked many times about the Ten Commandments,
mm-hmm.
and how we, you know, the respect you have for the Ten Commandments and how we ought to be willing to follow after those principles. And when you say as a Christian, well, we're not under the law, that's true. However, you're not under the law from a ritualistic standpoint, but the principles of righteousness don't ever go away.
That's right.
And that's an important point that needs to be made at the outset to understand what turning the other cheek is. One more scripture on this part, then we'll continue in Matthew 5.
All right, Rick, let's turn to Galatians 3, 19 to 24. Wherefore then serveth the law? It was added because of transgressions, till the seed should come to whom the promise was made. And it was ordained by angels in the hand of a mediator. Now a mediator is not a mediator of one, but God is one. Is the law then against the promises of God? God forbid. For if there had been a law given, which could have been given life, verily righteousness should have been by the law. But the scriptures have concluded all under sin, that the promise by faith of Jesus Christ might be given to them that believe. But before faith came, we were kept under the law, shut up unto the faith which should afterwards be revealed. Wherefore, the law was our schoolmaster to bring us unto Christ, that we might be justified by faith.
All right, so again, it's talking about the relationship between the law covenant and now the grace that comes through Jesus. And the Apostle Paul is saying that the law was there to identify sin. And he said, and it's an interesting thing, because it sounds like, well, gee, maybe God didn't know what he was doing, because the Apostle Paul says, if there had been a law given which could have given life, righteousness should have come through the law. Now you're saying, well, why couldn't the law give life? Well, it could, but nobody could do it. That was the problem.
Everybody was imperfect.
Because sin reigns. And the law was there to put the spotlight on the fact that nobody lives up to this kind of a law, because it's too high, because we are not perfect. And that's why it says, and now Jesus comes after. And in fact, the law, was it, what does the Apostle Paul call the law here? The last line there.
A schoolmaster to bring us unto Christ.
Okay, and that's kind of like the school bus driver. Okay, mm-hmm. Collecting the kids and bringing them to where they need to go. It was a transportation from plain old sin without understanding. Now you have sin and you understand it and how difficult it is, and now it brings you to Christ so you can get beyond the sin by the grace of God through Jesus. So, and that's what justification by faith is. So the relationship with the law is very, very important, and the point is, the law is not something you're throwing away, but you're putting it in perspective, and there's a huge difference between those two things. This is all important, basic information as we look at the subject of turning the other cheek.
This is Jonathan and Rick with Chris. Welcome back to Christian Questions on News Talk 104.7 WXLM. Our subject this morning, what does it mean to turn the other cheek? To be a part of our program, call 860-442-9956. That's 442-WXLM.
And Jonathan, before we answer that question, what we need to do is lay some groundwork. We need to look at Matthew chapter 5 and figure out the pattern of Jesus' teaching. Because if we get the pattern, then when we get to that verse 39, it fits in and it makes perfect sense. So we started with Matthew 5, 17 through 21. And establish that Jesus is not there to destroy the law, but to fulfill the law and what that means. Now let's go on to Matthew 5, 21 to 26.
Ye have heard that it was said by them of old time, thou shalt not kill, and whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment. But I say unto you that whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of judgment. And whosoever shall say to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council. But whoever shall say, thou fool, shall be in danger of Gehenna. Therefore, if thou bring thy gift to the altar, and there remember that thy brother hath aught against thee, leave there thy gift before the altar, and go thy way. First be reconciled to thy brother, and then come and offer thy gift. Agree with thine adversary quickly, whilst thou art in the way with him, lest at any time the adversary deliver thee to the judge, and the judge deliver thee to the officer, and thou be cast into prison. Verily I say unto thee, thou shalt by no means come out thence till thou hast paid the utmost farthing.
And Jonathan, this is a subject for a program in and of itself. We're not going to get into it in too much detail. But the interesting thing is Jesus is saying to his followers, who were very familiar with the law and with traditions, he says, you've heard it said of old time, thou shalt not kill. Well, where do you get that from?
The law.
The law, the Ten Commandments, one of the commandments, thou shalt not kill. And he says, whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment. Now, that was something that was added traditionally, and we'll get into that in a moment. Okay, but you have the law and tradition. He says, you're familiar with all of this. And they would probably be nodding their heads, yep, of course we are. And he says, but I say unto you. So he says, here's what you're familiar with. And this is a great teaching tool, incidentally. I mean, it's a great fundamental tool for teaching. Get people following you on grounds that they understand clearly, and then build from that perspective. He says, but I say to you, whoever is angry with his brother shall be in danger of judgment. Okay, so he's saying now, because in the law it said you shouldn't kill. Mm-hmm. And so the attitude toward that law was, the law says we shouldn't kill, but doesn't mean I can't harass you. Doesn't mean I can't push you around a little bit. Doesn't mean, and so you have this, the letter of the law says, well, it only says you shouldn't kill. Therefore, I can do pretty much everything up to that point. And Jesus is saying, he's backing them away from that. He's saying, look, I'm saying to you that if you're angry with your brother, you're in danger of judgment. That should start to make them think, well, wait a minute, that's not the way the law reads. And he's saying, you're right, I'm lifting up the standard. I'm saying the law is correct. But now I'm gonna look at you and admonish you to inwardly apply this law. Okay, so don't be angry with your brother. You're in danger of judgment. Whosoever shall say raka shall be in danger of the council. Now, what does raka mean?
It means villain, blockhead, a slander is a thief according to worldly standards. Stealing one's good name according to the Christian standards. Still higher slanders are murderers. Thus, the very suggestion of slander to be shunned as the spirit of Satan.
Now, interesting, because that's the level Jesus is lifting this to. If you say raka to your brother, call him a villain, or literally the word means blockhead. And, you know, whenever you hear that phrase, blockhead, what do you think of? I think of Charlie Brown, you know, Lucy, you blockhead.
I think of Gumby. They had the guys that had the square heads.
Boy, have we aged ourselves there. Yeah, you're right, now that you mention it. But, you know, that was a dramatic insult in those days, okay? So you have Jesus saying when you are slandering your brother's good name, he's saying that's like you're going to be judged by that. And he says you're in danger of the council. The council in those days was the Sanhedrin, 71 men. It was the highest court of law amongst the Jews, and for the most difficult offenses. So he's saying if you are slandering your brother's good name, that's what you're in danger of. He says, you realize that you're doing something terrible here, and if you say to your brother, thou fool, he says, you're in danger of Gehenna, which is a symbol of the second death.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he is saying that the law is good. Thou shalt not kill, but I say to you, there's much more to that than you may have originally thought.
But don't kill your brother's reputation.
Right, because that, and the interesting thing is, he's saying, that is just as bad. Now think about that in terms of how serious that is. If Jesus is saying it's just as bad to kill your brother's reputation as it is to kill him, we had better be awfully careful.
That's for sure.
About how we deal one with another. I mean, this is a tremendous lesson, and it helps us to get the context of what the turning the other cheek is going to...
It's an inward battle.
And that's exactly the point. Because when you kill somebody, obviously it's an outward action.
Yes.
And it's pretty obvious something went dramatically wrong. But to kill someone's reputation can be done in quiet whispers. Did you hear about... You know what I heard about this person? Oh my goodness, don't even... You know, that's what can be happening. And it's not necessarily something that people see. I mean, you could feasibly, I could feasibly start a rumor, have that rumor spread throughout, and nobody knows where it began.
You're right.
And who's the one who's responsible? It would be me.
Mm-hmm.
So Jesus is saying, you had better watch out how you deal with your brother. Okay, great, great lesson. And it's going to bring us to turning the other cheek in a few minutes. Let's skip through this next commentary here. Folks, if you have a thought, it is 860-442-9956, 442-WXLM. We'd love to hear from you. What does it mean to turn the other cheek? Let's continue, Jonathan, in Matthew 5. Let's go to verses 27 to 32.
Ye have heard that it was said by them of old time, that thou shalt not commit adultery.
Now, again, where do you hear that?
From old time.
That's the law.
Yeah.
Okay, it's pretty obvious.
But I say unto you, that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery already in his heart. And if thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out, and cast it from thee. For it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into Gehenna. And if thy right hand offend thee, cut it off, and cast it from thee. For it is profitable for thee that one of the members should perish, and not that the whole body should be cast into Gehenna. It has been said, whosoever shall put away his wife, let him give her a writing of divorcement. But I say unto you, that whosoever shall put away his wife, saving for the cause of fornication, causeth her to commit adultery. And whosoever shall marry her that is divorced committeth adultery.
So here Jesus, again, and he is getting into some shock teachings here. You know, the idea about slander that we just talked about would have been pretty shocking, because he's saying you are liable. You are absolutely liable before God if you slander your brother's good name. And now he says, he goes back to what you've heard of old time, you shall not commit adultery. Everybody knows that. You're not supposed to do that. Everybody knows. But then he says, but I say to you, if you look upon a woman to lust after her, you have committed adultery with her already in your heart. That is a piercing thought. And again, it is an inward lesson on an outward statement of the law. He's saying, you think that just because the law says don't commit adultery, you say, ah, and this is human nature. Oh, okay, I can't commit adultery, but I can do anything else I want inside my own little head, and nobody needs to know because it's my own private thought. Jesus is saying, stop right there. That's wrong. And again, he's giving that the same kind of condemnation as actually committing the act. That's scary.
It is.
And he's driving this higher standard right into them and saying, the law says, but I say, it's more than just outward, it's inward. And then he talks about, you've heard it said that, where is it? Whosoever shall put away his wife, let him give her a writing of divorcement. That came from the law. And in the law, it said that you could do that, you know, if she, for, it doesn't say for any cause, but it implies that for a lot of different reasons. And Jesus is saying, no. He's saying there should only be one reason to give a writing of divorcement, and that is for the cause of fornication. So again, when you think about it, and you think, let's put that into practical terms. In our world today, people get divorced, and the reasons are irreconcilable differences. According to Jesus' words, that doesn't cut it. He says you shouldn't be doing that. You shouldn't be doing that. That's wrong. That is breaking a covenant that you have no right to be breaking for such foolishness. He's basically saying, you know, step up and fight for those things which are right and sacred in the sight of God. So in these two things, Jonathan, he's saying what goes on inside your head can be as condemnatory to you as what you do physically. That's what he's saying here. So again, he's and the Jews were very good at being just like everybody else, in that they're very good at looking at the statement and saying, okay, means I can't do that, but I can do all of these other things. And Jesus is reining in all of that kind of thinking, okay? He was telling them that their loose perspective on divorce was just wrong. And his lesson here is any divorce is inexcusable but for one reason, and we stated that. And that a divorce executed for wrong reasons carries serious consequences. You shouldn't do it. Now, these are not easy things to accept, are they?
No, it's hard.
Because the standard is much higher than previous.
Was he saying literally pluck out your eye? Or cut off your hand?
Well, and actually, I'm glad you brought that up. Because no, that's not a literal statement. What he's saying is, if what you see is enticing you to wrong thoughts, which are very condemnatory to you, then you need to stop looking that way. If what you are doing is bringing you into a world of sin, you need to cut it off. You need to stop that action. That's what he's saying. You know, your right eye, that's the sort of the dominant eye. I'm not going to get into why, but just that's a scriptural concept.
It's a heart attitude.
Yes. And if you are going in that direction and you're looking for these kinds, look, and pornography is a great example of all of this. Pornography is easy in our world. It's easy. Sometimes you end up getting it when you don't even want to get it. I was once doing some, a couple years ago, there was a hurricane coming up the coast or something, and so I was looking to get some information on it, and mm-hmm. there was a number of sites, and I just picked one, and I clicked on it. It was no hurricane. You know, I said, wait, this is not what I was looking for, and you say, how did that happen? And you look, and then you figure it out, and you say, wow, you know, somebody, why do they do that? It just is easy, and once you get in, it's hard to get out. And Jesus is saying, don't look there. That's what he's saying. Don't look there, because the things that you process and you allow to live in your own head, they have great sway over you in the sight of God. You know, our private thoughts are not out of God's sight. And I think
you're right.
That's the important thing here. Okay, so it comes down not just to your actions, but your attitude. That's what Jesus is saying here. Now we get to Matthew 5, 33 to 37. We're almost to our theme scripture.
Again, ye have heard that it hath been said by them of old time, thou shalt not forswear thyself, for shalt perform unto the Lord thine oaths. But I say unto you, swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is his footstool, neither by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Neither shalt thou swear by thy head, because thou canst not make one hair white or black. But let your communication be yea, yea, or nay, nay, for whatsoever is more than these cometh of evil.
Okay, and again, he's saying you shall not forswear yourself, but perform unto the Lord thine oaths. And this is a very simple process here. He's saying don't talk so much, just do what you say you're going to do. And the idea of forswearing yourself, this was a tradition. This wasn't in the law, because the law really was positioned against this kind of thing. But traditionally, men would say, I will swear on this that I will do this thing or that thing. And Jesus is saying, forget all of that. Just let your yea be yea and your nay be nay. Let's look at Leviticus 19:12.
And ye shall not swear by my name falsely, neither shalt thou profane the name of thy God. I am the Lord.
Okay, so he's saying, do not swear by God's name falsely. And that reminds me of a phrase that is very common in our world today. You've heard people say, well, I don't use this phrase, but for example's sake, they say, I swear to God.
Mm-hmm.
And what are they trying to say when they're saying that? Oh, it's true. Trust me. I swear to God. He's saying, don't do that. That is taking the sacred name of God and putting it into a flippant kind of a conversation. And when someone is getting to the point of having to say something like that, you know their credibility is in doubt because they have to go there. Rather, we should look at Deuteronomy 23:23.
That which is gone out of thy lips, thou shalt keep and perform, even a free will offering, according as thou hast vowed unto the Lord thy God, which thou hast promised with thy mouth.
There is something to be said for the integrity of doing what you say. That's what Deuteronomy there is talking about. And then James 5:12.
Above all, my beloved, do not swear either by heaven or by earth or by any other oath, but let your yes be yes and your no be no, so that you may not fall under condemnation.
All right, so we now have arrived at the section of text where our theme text begins. So far we've learned there's three basic things. What are they?
The spirit of the law is higher than the letter of the law.
Second,
Jesus requires us to focus on the higher path.
And last,
Internal thoughts must be reined in to facilitate compliance with the spirit of the law.
All right, now I just want to say that again, and Fred, we should go into a break. Internal thoughts must be reined in to facilitate compliance with the spirit of the law. It's an internal thing. And when you get to the point of turning the other cheek, that's where it must begin.
This is Jonathan and Rick with Christian Questions on News Talk 104.7 WXLM. Give us a call back after the break, 442-9956. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Christian Questions on News Talk 104.7 WXLM. Our subject this morning, what does it mean to turn the other cheek? To be a part of our program, call 860-442-9956. That's 442-WXLM.
And Jonathan, we have spent the first two segments really doing a lot of groundwork for getting to this point of the program where we're actually going to talk about what it means to turn the other cheek. And the groundwork is important because Jesus has established a pattern of teaching by saying, you've heard it said before. And he was continually referring back to the law and back to their traditions. And then he says, but I say to you, and he takes the principle of the law, and he never degrades it, but he magnifies it. He magnifies it, he makes it of even greater importance, and then he applies it inwardly instead of just outwardly. And I think that's the key here as we now look at Matthew 5, 38 to 42. And let's read those verses, then we'll take this call.
You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist an evildoer. But if anyone strikes you on the right cheek, turn the other also. And if anyone wants to sue you and take your coat, give your cloak as well. And if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go also the second mile. Give to everyone who begs from you, and do not refuse anyone who wants to borrow from you.
So on top of turning the other cheek, there's a lot of other very straightforward statements here that we're going to need to discuss. But Jonathan, let's go to this call first.
Welcome to Christian Questions. This is Jonathan and Rick. Who are we speaking with?
Gentlemen, good morning. This is Julius.
Good morning, Julius.
How are you?
Good.
Good. Yeah, I can't help but reflect on the recent political campaigning.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. How refreshing it would have been if one of the campaigners, or what is it, you know, turn the other cheek and be positive and cut out the mudslinging. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, just be positive, just be, courteous and so forth. Turn the other cheek? Wow. That's unheard of. In any case, Proverbs, I got a couple of golden texts.
Okay.
I'd like to share quickly with you here, Proverbs. What do we have here in Proverbs? We have Proverbs 16, verse 32, I think it is. Proverbs 16, verse 32. He that is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he that ruleth his spirit than he that taketh a city.
That's a good text.
I like that text, and then a few chapters later, I think gives a slant that you're reflecting on, and that's, I think, the heart condition. As a man thinketh in his heart, as a man thinketh in his heart, so you see that's 23:7. And one of my favorite, truly favorite verses I'll share with you, and then I'll conclude my dissertation here. Will I get a PhD for this?
No. Not from us, anyway.
Not even if I send you $10?
No. Not from us, anyway.
Yeah. Hebrews 12:14 has to be one of the most beautiful verses in the Bible. Follow peace with all men and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord. I love that text. Be at peace and to follow it, and reflect that holiness which God appreciates and rewards. God bless.
Thank you, Joyce, for calling. We appreciate
You're
it.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
You too. Good texts.
Oh, yeah.
Some good scriptures, and the principles ring loud and clear because, again, we've been looking at how Jesus is comparing the letter of the law, what the law says, And then how we can rationalize our way all the way up to committing the actual sin that the law says you shouldn't commit. And Jesus is saying, oh, no, 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 no. Hold on. All that rationalization you just did, not good either. As a matter of fact, just as bad. So, and Jesus is saying, follow peace and holiness with all men. Now, how do you do that? Well, and one of the other scriptures, you know, he talked about in Proverbs, where it talks about reigning in your spirit. You have to have that internal discipline. And really, I think that's what Jesus was talking about here, was learning how to apply an internal discipline that doesn't get you into a situation where you're just living your life in reactive mode. Because that's what most of us do. We go through our daily lives and we react to things as they happen. Now, obviously, you have to react. But the question is there thought before the reaction, or is it just that gut reaction that happens? Because it happens fast.
It does.
It's easy. And when things are so easy, sometimes they're not so good. Okay, we had read Matthew 5:38-42, which is the context of our theme scripture. Let's go now back to where it comes from, Exodus, because again, he says, you heard it said, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. Where does that come from?
Exodus 21:22-26. And if a man strive together and hurt a woman with child, so that her fruit depart, and yet no harm follow, he shall be surely fined, according as the woman's husband shall lay upon him, and he shall pay as the judges determine. But if any harm follow, then thou shalt give life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burning for burning, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. And if a man smite the eye of his servant, or the eye of his maid, and destroy it, he shall let him go free for his eye's sake.
So, not only do you have eye for eye, tooth for tooth, it goes on, hand for hand, foot for foot, burning for burning, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. Doesn't sound very pleasant.
No.
And now, it's an environment in which there's absolute accountability. That's for sure, and there's nothing wrong with accountability. But Jesus is saying, you've heard it said, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. But he says, but I say to you, do not resist an evildoer. So he is saying the law says justice is a requirement. Now, is Jesus saying, well, forget justice and just get beat up? Is that what he's saying here?
I don't think so.
And we're going to have to develop that as we go through this. But just, Jonathan, the two-paragraph comment there, Russell gives a very, very good explanation here. And let's just read it.
Another of the teachings of the ancients was the absolute justice should be rendered, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Some features of the law did indeed imply this. If one caused an injury to another intentionally, he should be maimed himself correspondingly. This strict requiring of justice prevailed, not only among the Jews, but also amongst the Romans and the Greeks.
And then skipping down a little bit, continue.
Hear his words, I say unto you, resist not evil. Do not retaliate, rendering evil for evil, but whosoever shall smite you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. This is an astounding proposition. Who can obey it? Even if we modify it all that language will permit, it is still apparently beyond reach of any fallen human being. It teaches the ideal requirements of divine law and perfect love.
Okay, so it's saying what's being suggested here is that this is a very, very, very high standard, that you don't render evil for evil, that you rise above. And it is a very difficult thing. Have you ever been in a situation where somebody did you wrong?
Mm-hmm.
And what was not trying to put you on the spot, but your immediate knee-jerk reaction inside your head, maybe you didn't do anything, but what did you think?
Get back at them.
Right. And you know, that's not even a clear-cut thought process. It just happens.
Yep.
You hit me, I am going to hit you back. Oh, you did that to me, did you? Oh, you didn't just do that. I mean, you know, we have all of these little one-liners that we could fit in here from our day. That
the Hatfields and the McCoys.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly, exactly. So you have all of this, and Jesus is saying, don't fall to that level. He's implying that there's a falling to that level. Now, should justice be done? Or is this saying forget justice? I think that's going to be an important question that we'll really begin to get into in the second hour. But I think Jesus is saying here, he says, but I say to you, the law says to be just is appropriate, but to be merciful and humble is a higher standard than that. Jesus has clearly raised the consequence from just retaliation to humble acceptance. And again, we'll need to define that more clearly in the second hour. He clearly altered the ideal reaction to sin and thereby altered the consequences put forth in the law. So, by giving a higher standard to the law, Jesus does not negate the law. It's still right to not kill. It's still right to be just, to not commit adultery. But there are also deeper matters of the heart. And I think that's what Jesus is addressing here. He's not throwing out requirements of justice. He's saying, I need to talk to you so you can adjust yourselves inside first. So when it comes to compliance, the compliance will be from the inside out and not from the outside in. And I think that's where we need to get to when we understand this idea of turn the other cheek. This is one of those inside out things that if you can get to that point, there's a great blessing attached to it. But it requires an incredible amount of restraint.
Rick, when I read the theme text, I didn't understand the words, do not resist an evildoer. It was very hard to get my hands around that.
Yeah, and you're right. That's a hard phrase.
It is.
You say that. What do you mean, don't resist? So if someone takes a swing at you and hits you in the head, you say, wait a minute, Jesus says don't resist, so I should stand here and just wait for him to hit me again. That's kind of what it might sound like.
It does.
And it sounds like, you know, again, dating ourselves. Back in the ancient days of my youth, there was a cartoon, and the guy, I think his name was George Doormat or something like that. I don't know if you remember that.
I don't.
But the guy just always got walked over. That's why his name was George Doormat. You know, and his wife was George. You know, and then, you know, and everything he did, he was always being trodden down upon. And you know, he just walked through life. Oh, well, you know. I mean, that was sort of the attitude. And that's almost what this is sounding like. Be thou therefore, George the doormat. I mean, that's, but that's not it at all. It's not it at all. And that's why we took the time to lay out Matthew 5 and the pattern of teaching, saying, I'm teaching you to apply these things inside first, then outside second. So, how do we turn the other cheek today? You said getting the meaning was hard. Well, what does it mean to not resist an evildoer? That word resist, what does that mean?
It means to stand against or oppose.
Okay. Now, again, that can be confusing, right?
Because
you're saying, wait a minute, things are not sounding the way they ought to be sounding here. Something's not quite right. Well, let's take a look at some of the other scriptures that use that word resist, because, again, it might even make it more confusing. But isn't that a great thing to do to end an hour?
Let's look at James 4, verse 7. Submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you.
See, now we just said, Jesus says, do not resist an evildoer. And James says, resist the devil. Now, is the devil an evildoer?
Yes.
And it says, resist the devil.
Mm-hmm.
Same word.
Yep.
How do you figure that out? Next one.
Luke 21, 15. For I will give you a mouth and wisdom, which all your adversaries shall not be able to gainsay nor resist.
Okay, so I will give you this wisdom which your adversaries won't be able to resist. Same word.
Galatians 2:11, but when Peter was come to Antioch, I withstood him to the face because he was to be blamed.
Okay, so I withstood him. This is the same word. Withstood is the same word as resist. Okay, and Ephesians 6:13.
Wherefore, take unto you the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand.
All right. So, all of these scriptures, Jonathan, put this in the importance on actually standing up and resisting.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jesus in Matthew 5 says, don't resist.
Right.
I just can't resist going into all this, because it's irresistible. So, you've got these two apparently contradictory things. Again, that's why context is such an important thing, and why establishing the teachings of Matthew 5 before help us to really understand what Jesus is saying. And in the second hour, we're going to directly address this seeming contradiction and put things in order and see if we can get our arms around what it really means to turn the other cheek. For Jonathan and Rick, this is Christian Questions. We will be back after the news and all that, but until then, what does it mean to turn the other cheek? We'll be back soon. Think about it.
Seeking for answers, seeking for God's truth.
Carol Lundstrom's father said, this was a Father's Day thing, ego is like a dinosaur chained to your front lawn. You keep feeding it, and it stomps on your house. Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to Christian Questions Talk Radio with your breakfast with Jonathan and Rick. The objective of our program is to discuss with you, our listeners, thought-provoking and meaningful topics based on the Bible. It's a call-in format. We're caller-friendly, and we look forward to hearing from you. Jonathan, what are we talking about?
Well, Rick, our question this morning is, what does it mean to turn the other cheek? And our theme text is found in Matthew 5, verse 39. But I say unto you, that ye resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite thee on thy right cheek, turn to him the other also.
So we're talking about turning the other cheek and what that means. Let's just take care of a couple of items of business before we get back into this discussion.
You can check us out on our website, and that is christianquestions.net. And if you are listening live on the web, there is a delay, so be aware. And we have many archive programs you can listen to, and you can use them for personal Bible study. If you have any questions or comments, the website is the best place to contact us. Again, that's christianquestions.net.
Thank you, sir. And, Jonathan, before we ended the first hour, you asked a question, or you said that, you know, the idea of do not resist an evildoer was kind of like hard to get your arms around.
Yes, absolutely.
And so we were talking about that. Then we read some scriptures, and the scriptures said that you should resist.
Exactly.
And Jesus says don't, and then the other ones say do. So, okay, what do you do with all of this? And that's part of the discussion here that we need to begin to develop. So the first thing we want to do is look at, okay, what does it mean an evildoer? What is evil? It says do not resist evil. What does that mean?
It means hurtful, evil, figuratively...
calamitous.
Yeah, calamitous, passively ill, diseased, but especially morally culpable, vicious.
So it doesn't sound good, any of those things.
No,
so it's
derelict.
And so Jesus is saying, don't resist. And again, you got to say, well, what does it mean? Well, again, if we go back to the Old Testament scriptures and we go back to the definitions, what we see is Jesus is saying, don't entangle yourself with something that gets you into the mode of retaliating. That's not the thing to do. That's not what you're supposed to be, because when you're getting back at someone, you're wanting to do someone else hurt because you've been hurt. And he's saying, that's what he's saying by not resisting an evildoer. If anyone strikes you on the cheek, turn the other also. The lesson for us is that we should use all lawful and legal means in our self-defense. I think that's appropriate, and we were talking about this during the break. If someone does wrong to you and there's a legal aspect to it, should you pursue it?
It depends, I guess.
Depends on what would you say it would depend on?
How severe?
Okay, and you know, if someone hurts a member of your family,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
there should be some kind of recompense, some kind of punishment for that.
Okay, yeah.
But what happens though? What happens if there isn't any? What happens if the system fails you? What happens if the system drops the ball and there's a technicality and things?
And justice is not served.
Right, and justice is not served.
Boy, is that depressing.
But see, Jesus, I think, is saying, don't go after them. He's saying, don't you retaliate. I think he's saying, allow justice to prevail wherever it possibly can. But you know what? If it doesn't, what does God say? Vengeance is mine. I will repay. I'm not God. So I think there's a difference between those two things. Folks, if you have a thought, it's 860-442-9956, 442-WXLM. Jonathan, let's go through a couple of scriptures that help us to grasp this part of the program here.
Matthew 10, 22 and 23. And ye shall be hated of all men for my name's sake. But he that endureth to the end, the same shall be saved. But when they persecute you in the city, flee into the next. For verily I say unto you, ye shall not have gone through the cities of Israel till the Son of Man be come.
Okay, so he's saying when they persecute you in this city, did he say, well, stand there and take the persecution like a man?
No, flee to another.
He
leave.
Said, leave, okay? He says you don't need to be sitting there under that. Go, okay? Let's read Matthew 26, 51 to 54. Same idea here.
Suddenly, one of those with Jesus put his hand on his sword, drew it, and struck the slave of the high priest, cutting off his ear. Then Jesus said to him, put your sword back into its place. For all who take the sword will perish by the sword. Do you think that I cannot appeal to my Father, and he will at once send me more than 12 legions of angels? But how, then, would the scriptures be fulfilled, which say it must happen in this way?
All right, so an important statement here. Jesus says, those who live by the sword, what's going to happen?
They'll die by the sword.
And see, that is one thing that we need to really, really grasp. If you're going to get yourself involved in life like that, you're going to end up being like that. And the question Jesus is saying, is that what you really want? We do have a call.
Welcome to Christian Questions. This is Jonathan and Rick. Who are we speaking with?
John, hey.
Hey, John.
Good morning. I believe in an eye for an eye.
Okay.
And it's only pertained to family and children.
Okay, what do you mean by that?
If somebody harms a child in any way,
mm-hmm.
Okay, now with today's society, you can figure out by any way. I think it should be an eye for an eye. If that person kills a member of your family, an eye for an eye. If they physically harm a child, you mean by physically harm a child, an eye for an eye. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, so let me just clarify that. So you're saying if they physically harm your child, they give your child a black eye. Are you saying you should give them a black eye?
Exactly.
Okay, or you should give their child a black eye?
No.
Okay.
In other words, for example, if I've always told my daughter, okay,
mm-hmm.
that if she's in school, one of the students hit her. She goes up to the adult ignores her or doesn't take care of it. I've told her to take care of herself.
Okay.
Same thing. If somebody harms my family members and they are unable to take care of it themselves, it's my job to take care of it for them. Follow me?
Okay, yeah, I follow you. And we don't have time to get into a lot of the particulars on that because, you know, there's such a thing as making sure that things stay where they belong, but there's also such a thing as going a little bit beyond what Jesus is saying here. So, listen, John, we have another call. Feel free to call back later on, and we'll see if we can round out some of the discussion on this.
Okay.
Okay, thanks, John, so much.
Well, Rick, we do have another call. Welcome to Christian Questions. This is Jonathan and Rick. Who are we speaking with?
Good morning, my friends. How are you doing?
Hey,
good, Randall.
How are you doing?
Okay.
I have Psalm 99 and then just a couple of quotes. Psalm 99, verse 8. O Lord, our God, you answered them. You were a forgiving God, though you punished their offenses. And that brings in that sense of just what you were talking about right now, that that there is that God is the just God, but the justice has to be in the hands of God. And what I would propose here is that what Jesus really is giving us here is freedom. Because C.S. Lewis here, I have a quote, I think if God forgives us, we must forgive ourselves. Otherwise, it is almost like setting up ourselves as a higher tribunal than him. And in Shakespeare, we have Claudius after the murder, forgive me my foul murder, I am still possessed of those effects of which I did the murder. So in the process of forgiving and turning the other cheek, and I don't think God is saying be a doormat here by any means, but what he is saying is if you let go of the pain and you let go of the anger, then it actually liberates you.
Okay.
So God is, Jesus here is actually giving us freedom it's freedom from the pain, it's freedom from the hate, and freedom from the hurt. And Jesus is essentially saying, let God take care of it. You don't have to. Just walk away from the hurt.
Okay, very good.
Thank you, Randall.
All right, talk to you soon.
All right.
Bye-bye.
So now, Jonathan, those last two calls had two very different approaches.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and again, you know, let's put this out on the table, and folks, feel free to call in 860-442-9956, 442-WXLM. But one of the things that John was saying was that, you know, a child should be able to retaliate accordingly. And I think he said, if I got this correct, he says, you know, you bring it to an adult if somebody does something, and if the adult doesn't do anything about it, you take it upon yourself. I think if I understood, that's what John was saying. Randall was saying pretty much the opposite. He's saying learn to walk away. So you have two different approaches here, and the question is, okay, well, how do you put all this into a workable pattern and follow what Jesus was saying? And especially teaching children, because, you know, part of raising children is you have to teach them to be able to stand up for themselves. What does that mean? what does it mean and what doesn't it mean? So this opens up a whole big area of discussion here. We do have another call. Let's take that right now.
Welcome to Christian Questions. This is Jonathan and Rick. Who are we speaking with?
Hello.
Good morning, Don.
Good morning.
I think that the hunger for vengeance is the mainspring which provides the energy that drives much of criminal law.
Okay.
And I don't think you're going to get rid of it. And I can't. Yeah, I guess it's a good thing that it's there. It's certainly a natural thing that it's there.
You mean the hunger for vengeance?
Yeah.
Okay, and why would you say it's a good thing that it's there?
Because it's good that we have criminal laws on the books, and it's good that criminals are prosecuted.
So, would you say then it is definitely the best path to go through the legal system because you're mentioning the criminal laws, or are you saying, you know, you can take it upon yourself?
It's good that the criminal laws are on the books because we don't want, in the first place, we don't want the wrong people punished, and then the second thing, we do want uniform punishments for bad acts.
Okay, and those very important parts of this whole discussion.
And I think in the same way that a clock is a good thing, but clocks don't run without the mainspring being there. And if the mainspring and its energy weren't controlled by the escapement of the clock, then we wouldn't have accurate timekeeping.
Mm-hmm. Makes some sense.
Well, that's what I try to do.
Well, good job there, brother. Don, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Take care.
And you know, Jonathan, that adds another dimension because Don is bringing in the idea and the important idea, the really important basic idea, you don't want the wrong people punished.
Right.
So now, so you've got this whole jumble of things. Now you have the one perspective. Okay, you're raising children. You need to teach them to stand up for themselves. What does that mean in regard to retaliation? Then Randall says, you know, you learn to walk away, and you're saved from all of the misery that retaliation can bring you emotionally, internally. And then Don says, you have laws in place that are supposed to. Even-handedly distribute out appropriate retaliation. So now there's a myriad of questions with all of these things that come into play. The point is that I think we're beginning to really develop this idea of turning the other cheek and begin to categorize it and understand what it means. It doesn't mean that legal retribution is not important. It doesn't mean that there should not be consequences for evil done. What it does mean is that we should not take it upon ourselves and carry it upon our shoulders to mete out that consequence. And I think that's part of what we need to understand and get to. And I think that's the freedom that Randall is talking about. Because when it becomes an issue that we own, then you have that investment into the issue, and then you got to ask yourself, well, what happens with that investment? Folks, we're talking about turning the other cheek, and obviously how difficult it is to A, understand, and B, do.
This is Jonathan and Rick with Christian Questions on News Talk 104.7 WXLM. Grab your Bibles, don't go away, we'll be right back. Welcome back to Christian Questions on News Talk 104.7 WXLM. Our subject this morning, what does it mean to turn the other cheek? To be a part of our program, call 860-442-9956. That's 442-WXLM.
And Jonathan, this is really blossoming into a very, very good discussion because this is a difficult issue. I don't know that you can really... It's hard to just make a statement and say, okay, there it is, it's done, because life has so many variances in it, and you know, there are times, like when John brought up the idea of children being able to stand up for themselves. That's an important part of life.
It is.
But you don't want your child, I don't believe, you don't want them to get into the habit of retaliating. See, there's a difference, I think, between standing up for oneself and being retaliatory in the way you deal with things. And I think we need to understand what that is. Jonathan, we got a couple of short paragraphs here that we put together to sort of attempt to define all of this.
The bottom line, to be to abide by the letter of the law is a process that does not require a vast amount of maturity, wisdom, or foresight. It is a process we are all familiar with. As children, we were exposed to the letter of our parents' laws. They told us we had to do it without understanding and perhaps without our personal will being compliant in the matter.
And you can probably relate to that, right?
Oh, yeah.
As a child, you understand what it means to abide by the letter of the law.
Mm-hmm.
Mom says, I got to clean my room, or I got to be home by 5 o'clock, or I got to do this, or I got to do that, or I got to do the other thing. And, okay, mom or dad said it, got to do it. I don't like it, but I'm going to do it. I don't really know why. Why do I have to be home by 5 o'clock? Why can't it be 5:15? Why can't it be 5:30? It's still going to be light out. We're not eating dinner yet, on and on and on. But you learn to understand that the letter of the law is something there for because they're your parents.
That's right.
Okay, now the next paragraph.
To abide by the spirit of the law is another matter entirely. This implies maturity and wisdom and an understanding of foresight, as the requirements here are ultimately higher and harder to follow. Again, the example of the parent knowing, hopefully, when to press and when to let up in the discipline of their children shows the needed wisdom.
Okay, so the difference between the two, the letter of the law seeks an outward compliance to the law, while the spirit of the law seeks an inward compliance to the law. And again, in the spirit of the law, you look at the parental thing. Now, hopefully, the parent is wise in their distribution of requirements and justice and all of these things with the children, and that implies maturity. Mm-hmm. Now, look, all parents aren't wise, but we're trying to use a parent as an example of wisdom. So when we say parent, picture somebody who is wise, you know, father knows best kind of a thing,
mm-hmm.
and who is able to give us requirements and things to do or not to do because they know they're for our ultimate good and benefit, even though we don't see them. And then the child grows up and ideally grows up and says, wow, my parents were really wise when I was young, even though I didn't like what they said or what they did.
Mm-hmm.
Now I want to be just like them.
Mm-hmm.
You have learned to go by the spirit of the law.
Well, Rick, we have another call. Welcome to Christian Questions. This is Jonathan and Rick. Who are we speaking with?
You just cut that one. Another call was coming. Hang on, Don, for 1 second, okay? Don, hold on for 1 second. Well, there was another call that was just coming in, and
okay. So
we cut that off accidentally, so please call back.
Welcome back, Don.
Oh, hi. It's Don again, and I want to say that both standing up for oneself and retribution can be seen as reasonable, justifiable, and correct.
Mm-hmm.
I think that... to look at the situation of the Jews in Europe in the middle of the last century offers two illustrations. The resistance of the Jews in the Warsaw Ghetto is a matter of standing up for oneself, and I think certainly reasonable and respectable. And so too was the retribution the Jews visited on the Nazis that they caught up with after the war.
Okay, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, I think that the Jewish legal, Israel's legal system was in a very awkward spot. I don't know whether they did the right thing or not, pretending that their justice that they dished out was legal. I don't see how it could have been, because nobody understands one country's laws to reach into another. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And that certainly is what they were pretending to be doing. And also, not only were their laws reaching out of their own country, but they were reaching backward in time. The Israeli state didn't come into existence until 1948, and it was presuming to punish crimes committed in the 1930s and 40s.
Right, right.
So there are big legal problems with what they did, but I think simply on the basis of let's borrow a phrase from Thomas Jefferson, a matter of natural law, driven by the mainspring of a hunger for retribution. What was done to Eichmann and the others was correct, understandable, respectable.
Interesting points, Don. And you're really adding to the complication of the matter, but that's good because you're bringing out some important things.
I'm a double dipper, so I'll get out of the way, and thank you again.
Thanks, you, Don.
again, he brings up some very important parts of this issue, and you're looking at the practicality and saying, wow, you know, what happened to the Jews and what they did afterwards. He's right, you know, legally you can't go back, but they did. So you've got that issue. What do you do with it? Well, that's one of the things we're talking about. We do have another call, Jonathan.
Welcome to the program. Who are we speaking with? You're on air. Go ahead.
Is this Max?
Hi, this is Max.
Hey.
Sorry, got a little dead space there.
That's okay.
I wanted to go back to the not to denigrate what Don was talking about, but I kind of had this topic on my mind before I was listening to him. It's back to the children, especially, and, mm-hmm. and it applies to adults, obviously. But it's, I think, for the immediacy of the moment. If mm-hmm. you're physically attacked, you have every right, and not only the right, but the duty and the obligation to protect the life that God gave you.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as that threat is over, you also have the obligation to stop. And I think that we have a justice system in place, and on a higher level, we have a godly justice system that will take care of any injustices that occur after that point.
All right, and that really does clarify some matters here, because what you're saying is, in the immediacy of the moment, yes, it's appropriate and required, but when the threat is over, you're saying it's over.
Exactly.
And we need to end it ourselves, even if we were the victim in the matter. Once it's
right.
over,
and
it's done.
Just as importantly, I do want to reassert that we not only have the right, but we have the obligation to protect this precious life that God gave us.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Max.
I tell you, Jonathan, some great calls this morning here. And really adding to the understanding of what does it mean. And in all cases, see, self-defense is not retaliation.
You're right. Good point.
Okay. And that's what Max was saying. Self-defense is not retaliation. However, once the immediate threat is over, self-defense is no longer what's happening. It becomes retaliation. And that's what Jesus is saying. You need to step away from that. You don't make them pay. You just get out of the situation with honor and respectability. That, I think, is just part of this whole issue that is so very important here. So as we develop this discussion on turning the other cheek, it gets into some fine areas. And obviously, you know, there's these gray areas and difficult things to grasp and understand. And you've got legal issues coming in that Donna so eloquently mentioned to us, and the practical issues that John brought up in the first hour and Randall commented on and Max commented on. So we've got all of this process here. We're trying to digest it and put it in order. So by the time we're done, we say, okay, I got this better than I had it before. That's what we're after here.
How about if we continue on in Matthew, Rick, Matthew 5, 40 through 42. And if any man will sue thee at the law and take away thy coat, let him have thy cloak also. And whosoever shall compel thee to go a mile, go with him too. Give to him that asketh thee, and from him that thou would borrow of thee, turn not thou away.
Okay, so now Jesus is taking the idea of turning the other cheek, and he's applying that same principle in some other matters of life. And so he's going further on down this road. Now, can you imagine the shock value of this teaching built on the other teachings that he just said? I mean, those that were listening, their heads must have been spinning like, what is this man telling us? I mean, he's telling us that, you know, I shouldn't be saying bad things about this other person. He's telling me that what I think inside my head has as much consequence as what I actually do. You know, telling me that my marital fidelity is not just in what I do, but it's in what I think. You know, who does he think he is? And then this turn the other cheek matter. And so Jesus is continually raising the standard and saying, you need to learn to walk differently. I think that's the whole key here. You need to learn to walk differently with something higher. So now he's bringing in the idea of lawsuits. And it's funny to me. That's not funny. Just one of those things you look at, you smile and say, they had problems with lawsuits back then too? And they did. So it says, if any man will sue thee at law and take away thy coat, let him have thy cloak also. Well, what does that mean? What does that mean? Well, let's take a look at that. First of all, there's a difference between a coat and a cloak. Okay, read that second comment in the green there.
And if any man will sue thee at the law and take away thy coat, the inner garment in pledge for a debt, like let him have thy cloak also, the outer and more costly garment. This overcoat was not allowed to be retained overnight as a pledge for the poor, because they used it for a bed covering.
Okay, so now the basis of this comment actually comes from Exodus 22, 26 to 27. Let's read that scripture.
If thou at all take thy neighbor's garment to pledge, thou shalt restore it unto him before the sun goeth down, for that is his only covering. It is his garment for his skin, wherein shall he sleep. And it shall come to pass, when he crieth unto me, that I will hear, for I am gracious.
So in the law, in the Old Testament law, it was said that if there's a debt to be paid, and you're going to give your garment, your outer garment, as a pledge that, look, I'm going to repay you, I'm going to give you this, and, you know, give me to the end of the day kind of thing. The idea is that the law said that you shouldn't hold that garment overnight, because that's how they're going to keep warm. And the idea
it's
of,
like their blanket.
Right, right. It's exactly what it is. It's their blanket. It's their comfort for the evening, for the night. And the idea is, if you're going to be loaning, don't loan so much that you're going to make that other person completely uncomfortable. That's what Jesus is saying here, I think. And he's saying, if you are the one who is in debt, or in going to become indebted, he says you have to be willing to give everything, because your word has to be as sound as it needs to be. So, and he's saying, you know, if any man has in mind to bring a lawsuit against you, he's saying, okay, look, don't resist, don't fight it, submit to it, go through it, let the system, kind of like Don was saying, let the system have its way. But should we, here's the other question, if you turn the table, should we be going out and suing others? You know, should we be going out and read 1 Corinthians 6, 7.
Now, therefore, there is utterly a fault among you, because you go to law one with another. Why do ye not rather take wrong? Why do ye not rather suffer yourselves to be defrauded?
See, now this is a way of turning the other cheek, isn't it?
It is.
This is an application in a very difficult way, because here Jesus is saying that amongst the brotherhood, he's saying there are situations arising where you guys are getting legally entangled with one another, and you're on either sides of an issue. And he's saying, first of all, there's a problem with that. If you're brothers in Christ, you shouldn't be doing that. And he's saying, and if you are in that situation, why don't you just take the wrong? I mean, come on. This is not the way a brotherhood is supposed to operate. And I think that directly goes back to what Jesus was teaching about not retaliating. Because you may have every legal right, but is it going to make or break you? I mean, is it going to be the end of the world? I mean, you know, people sue over the most amazing things in our day and age. You know, you fall down in a building because you weren't watching where you were going, and you walk into a display in a store, and maybe you cut your leg because maybe that display shouldn't have been there.
You spilled a hot cup of coffee at McDonald's on your lap.
Yeah, yeah, that's a very famous lawsuit.
I had a pitcher at IHOP go on my lap from the waitress.
Jeez, you could have been wealthy, Jonathan. What's the matter with you? See, understand that, you know, and when we sue, and when people make all of those, the big money in those kinds of lawsuits, they sue for the pain and suffering. They sue for the emotional distress. They sue for the disruption of their life. That is retaliation. That is what Jesus is saying shouldn't be. You know, I had very, very quickly before the break, a number of years ago, I had a car accident. Somebody hit me, and there was a lawsuit. And you know what I asked for?
What?
I asked for just my lost wages, because I couldn't work for 6 weeks. That's all I wanted. I just wanted lost wages so I could just maintain my life. I wasn't interested, because to me, it wasn't worth the effort. It wasn't worth the pain and suffering to go through to say, you've disrupted my life. They did, but you know what? I'm a big boy. I can learn to grow out of it and get over it. That's, I think, what Jesus is saying. Turn the other cheek. Don't retaliate. Move forward with your life.
This is Jonathan and Rick with Christian Questions on News Talk 104.7 WXLM. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Christian Questions on News Talk 104.7 WXLM. Our subject this morning, what does it mean to turn the other cheek? To be a part of our program, call 860-442-9956. That's 442-WXLM.
And Jonathan, we've covered quite a bit of ground and talked about a lot of different applications of this, and now we're moving on to another application, and that's Matthew 5:42. Give to everyone who begs from you, and do not refuse anyone who wants to borrow from you. Now, I skipped one. Like I said, we're in Matthew 5:41.
If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go also the second mile.
All right, what does that mean? And I think this is something that's not generally understood. We have a paragraph here that does a really good job explaining it.
The next injunction is not generally understood. It does not mean that we should be turned aside from the duties and affairs of life at anybody's bidding. In olden times, certain magistrates, governors, etc., had the authority of law to press the service of the people for government work. For instance, note how Simon the Cyrenian was compelled to bear the cross for Jesus a certain distance. The word compel in our lesson is from the same Greek word and refers to a similar legal compulsion. Commandeered would be the modern way of referring to such a matter. Our Lord's injunction is that His followers should be so broad-minded, so liberal, so generous that they would not only obey the legal commands, but be ready to go farther, to do more than had been required.
All right, so it's more of a commandeering, and there was actual physical evidence of that in Simon the Cyrenian having to do that in relation to Jesus and carrying the cross. So again, that's another matter of turning the other cheek, not retaliating, not complaining about, oh, you're inconveniencing my life. Jesus is saying, rise above that so you can go further. That's the idea. Go further. Don't retaliate. Make yourself, show yourself to be an example of one who's got a long fuse, so to speak, one who's got that compassion inside of yourself and that willingness to sacrifice. Jonathan, we have another call. Why don't we take it
Welcome
right now?
Welcome to Christian Questions. This is Jonathan and Rick. Who are we speaking with?
Hello.
Hello. Go ahead.
Well, also covered, for instance, Roman soldiers used to carry about a 60 to 80 pound pack, including their shield, their weapon, and everything else. Under Roman law, what the Roman soldier could do was basically grab a person standing nearby and say, listen, you're carrying my kit for 1 mile. Now, you guys touched on that a bit, and what Jesus said, listen, that happens. Go with that guy an additional mile, and also give him the opportunity to talk if you think about it. You guys still with me?
Yeah. You're breaking up a little bit, but go ahead.
Try something else.
Is that better?
Yeah, much better.
Okay. Like I said, back in Roman times, back in the first century, a Roman soldier could actually grab a nearby person and say, listen, you're carrying my kit, the stuff that a Roman soldier would carry. And Jesus saying, go that extra mile. Well, you think about it, might give opportunity for communication back and forth. That Roman soldier may ask us, hey, you only had to carry this thing 1 mile. Why are you going further with me? And then it gives you the opportunity. You've earned the opportunity to share the gospel with someone.
And I think that's a great principle, that this idea of turning the other cheek opens up an entirely new door because it's so unexpected.
Well, absolutely. We're told in Romans chapter 12, do not repay evil for evil, but rather let God take vengeance, and that by doing good to our adversaries, the metaphor keeping burning coals on their head is used.
Right, and as a matter of fact, that was going to be our closing scripture, so you're ahead of us.
Oops, sorry about that. Dude, I'm sorry. Believe me, I wasn't cheating. I wasn't reading from the guy's playbook.
Hey, we like it. We like it. Eric, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
No problem, guys. God bless you. Have a great day.
You too.
All right, brothers.
Again, good comments there, because it gives, see, the whole idea here, and when Jesus is throughout this Matthew 5 raising the standard, it opens up a whole new vista of thinking. And not only for us, but see, if you work the internal, then you get the results in the external, and people look at that and say, why are you different? And you can say, well, let me tell you about why I'm different. And that opens up the whole different area. Jonathan, because of our lack of time here, we're gonna have to omit discussing Matthew 5:42 because we just won't have time to get into it. Apologize for that. Let's go to Matthew 10:16 through 19.
See, I am sending you out like sheep into the midst of wolves. So be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. Beware of them, for they will hand you over to councils and flog you in their synagogues, and you will be dragged before governors and kings because of me, as a testimony to them and the Gentiles. When they hand you over, do not worry about how you are to speak or what you are to say, for what you are to say will be given to you at that time.
So again, the idea of turning the other cheek comes up in this, and Jesus says something very important. Be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. He says you have to have wisdom in your approach. So in other words, it's a thought-out approach, and you have to approach things with innocence. And again, retaliation has no innocence.
You're right.
Okay, retaliation has an agenda. Innocence does not. And so Jesus is telling us all of these things. Let's go on to the last page here, Jonathan. Jesus' own experience, he not only taught us, but he lived it. And I think that's the key. Let's look at a couple of his examples.
Rick, let's read John 18:19 through 23. Then the high priest questioned Jesus about his disciples and about his teaching. Jesus answered, I have spoken openly to the world. I have always taught in synagogues and in the temple, where all the Jews come together. I have said nothing in secret. Why do you ask me? Ask those who heard what I said to them. They know what I said. When he had said this, one of the police standing nearby struck Jesus on the face, saying, Is that how you answer the high priest? Jesus answered, If I have spoken wrongly, testify to the wrong. But if I have spoken rightly, why do you strike me?
Now here, Jesus, here's the classic example. Jesus didn't turn his face and say, okay, now hit the other side. He didn't do that. But he didn't retaliate. He merely asked a question. They were asking questions, and he was saying, look, everything I've done has been out in the open. It's been in the synagogue. It's been on the street corners. It's in front of masses of people. Ask them. They'll tell you. They'll tell you what I've taught. There was nothing covert about Jesus' operation here. So he gets hit, physically hit, and he doesn't retaliate. But what he does is he meekly responds. He says, okay, now why are you doing that? Everything I have done has been above board and honest. If it hasn't, tell me where I'm wrong. And he just moves forward. Let's go to the next example of Jesus dealing with showing us how to turn the other cheek.
Luke 22:63 through 71. Now the men who were holding Jesus began to mock him and beat him. They also blindfolded him and kept asking him, Prophesy, who was it that struck you? They kept heaping many other insults on him. When day came, the assembly of the elders of the people, both chief priests and scribes, gathered together, and they brought him to their council. They said, If you are the Messiah, tell us. He replied, If I tell you, you will not believe, and if I question you, you will not answer. But from now on, the Son of Man will be seated at the right hand of the power of God. All of them asked, Are you then the Son of God? He said to them, You say that I am. Then they said, What further testimony do we need? We have heard it ourselves from his own lips.
So again, Jesus is under incredible pressure here, and the illegality of everything that happened throughout the night is we don't even have time to get into. But he's very, very humble in his approach to this. And again, he's saying that, look, you know what I stand for. You know what I've said. And if I tell you the answer to the question, you're not going to believe me anyway. He understood them, but he didn't fight it, because he knew that they had their agenda set, and he knew to retaliate, which he had a right to do.
You're right.
He had a right, because they treated him illegally. He still didn't do it. And I think that's a great lesson for us. And it cost him his life, and he gave his life willingly.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of the lesson of turning the other cheek. Let's look at 1 Peter 3:8-12 in terms of our own experience in learning to turn the other cheek.
Finally, all of you, having unity of spirit, sympathy, love for one another, a tender heart, and a humble mind, do not repay evil for evil or abuse for abuse, but on the contrary, repay with a blessing.
It's kind of like what Eric was saying last call there.
It is for this that you were called, and that you might inherit a blessing. For those who desire life and desire to see good days, let them keep their tongues from evil and their lips from speaking deceit. Let them turn away from evil and do good. Let them seek peace and pursue it. For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are open to their prayer. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil.
All right, so there's a very clear-cut admonition here. Don't repay evil for evil or abuse for abuse. But on the contrary, repay with a blessing. And by doing so, you get people's attention. They may not like it, but it's going to make an impact on them. And it's living up to the standard that Jesus is teaching us to live up to. He's telling us we have to rise above the normal activities of everyday life. We have to rise above reaction. We have to stand on something that is so much higher that people look at you and they say, there's something incredibly different about this person. There's an integrity that is powerful here. See, that's what turning the other cheek is applying this integrity and not falling prey to the agenda of reaction. All right. Last scripture, Jonathan, our time is running out, and this is the scripture that Eric was quoting. We're going to start Romans 12, verses 14 through 21.
Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse them. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Weep with those who weep.
All right, now there's a great principle here. Bless those who persecute you. Is that an easy thing?
No.
That's what turning the other cheek is, because by blessing them, you're not retaliating. There's no agenda there. Okay, go ahead.
Live in harmony with one another. Do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Do not claim to be wiser than you are.
I like that phrase. Do not claim to be wiser than you are. When to be able to live in harmony with one another, we can't be haughty or prideful. Because when you start to do that, you are the one sucking the harmony out of the relationship. When we live humbly, we are infusing a relationship with harmony. And so this is the lack of retaliation. Don't try to pretend to be wiser more than you are. Be humble so you can be harmonious, so you can get somewhere.
Do not repay anyone evil for evil, but take thought for what is noble in the sight of all. If it is possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all.
Okay, now interesting. So far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. There come circumstances where it may not be possible. But so far as it depends on you, that's how you have to apply yourself.
Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave room for the wrath of God. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord.
Don't avenge yourself. Don't retaliate. Rather, turn the other cheek. Why? Look, God knows. God will take care of it in his way, in his time. And I can assure you, this is one thing I can assure you of, that when God takes care of it, it's good. Much better than anything we could ever design in our own lives.
No, if your enemies are hungry, feed them. If they are thirsty, give them something to drink. For by doing this, you will heap burning coals on their heads. Do not become overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good.
And there it is. Overcome evil with good. We have a daily battle in dealing with evil. Folks, understand evil surrounds us in we have no time for a call right now, so we're not going to be able to take that at this point. Evil surrounds us. We don't have the ability to get away from it. So what do? You have to overcome it with good. That's our responsibility. Go ahead.
Heap warmth on their heads. Take a fire home with you.
Right.
Can you imagine that reaction after you were mean to that person?
And
they did something so kind.
There's something of great, deep, abiding, and transforming value in understanding what turning the other cheek really means. And again, Matthew 5 helps us to put it into a context that says we have an opportunity to do something incredibly special with our lives by turning the other cheek, by not retaliating, by giving good for evil. What a way to live. So, folks, as we leave you this morning, for Jonathan and Rick, this is Christian Questions. We'll be back again next week. Go turn the other cheek. Think about it.